Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. My name is Lana Noctigal. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. And this is community radio. We get by with a lot of help from some really creative volunteers. And we get by because you listen. You listen to us. This is community radio. We couldn't do it without you. Here's one of the fine organizations that helps us get along every day. Support comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocery in Ames, community-owned and community-focused since 1974. Open daily, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. Located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames, everyone can shop Wheatsfield Co-op. And we do. Yes, we do. Well, I don't know about you, but I ate well for the holidays. On this show, we talk about food, farming, recipes, advice, opinions. So I guess I did a lot of research for this show. My, I had a good time this holiday season. I ate very well. The snow arrived in time for Christmas Eve. Kind of surprised us all, especially behind the wheels of our car, but we enjoyed it. Yes, we did. And I enjoyed staying close to home and visiting friends and going to some real fine gatherings, including a anniversary party for some neighbors of ours that I really enjoyed. Here is a shout out to Les and Ruth Schickel, married for 70 years, folks. That's 70 years, and a fine bunch of folks they are. Real good neighbors. Of course, there was food with that, too. So it's time to say goodbye to the old year and hello to 2016. 2016. Oh, get used to that now. Let's raise a glass to the new year. Today in the Donalana Kitchen, we'll consider hard cider, water, milk from camels, and root beer. My co-host here on the Donalana Kitchen has been gone for the past couple weeks. Donna Prisgintis sends us a long-distance interview from New Zealand.
This is Donna down in the South Pacific for Christmas. Oh, boy, oh, boy. And I'm with my buddy Catherine Chappelle.
Hello.
Who also was a private chef in Los Angeles with me, but she is a New Zealander. And so she is touring me around for all the goodies that we have here in New Zealand. She's brought me today to a lovely place called O Ciders. And it is organic ciders in various flavors. And we're having a tasting of about six, seven, eight kinds of different things. And the farmer's name is Rowena Pierce, and she's going to give us a description, and we are going to be tasting these things, and then I'm going to select some. Here we go, Rowena.
Okay.
Tell me what we've got going on here.
Welcome. So,
and you make it all here, right?
We do make it all here. Some parts of it we do off-site at the larger scale winery when we do our big runs, but I think a new business, we've learned a few tricks along the way. We've learned a few things that we probably wouldn't do again.
So what do you do there? The pressing there?
So what we did is when we were receiving these big fruit bins of fruit in there.
Big, nice wooden crates of apples. Apples and pears.
Apples and pears. I think they're about 400, 500 kilos of
fruit. So we were talking about 1,000 pounds of fruit per box.
Exactly.
And they're piled up like three high, three across.
And they're all organic.
They're all organic. So we got our fruit in, but we can't process that much in one time here. So we crushed and pressed at the local winery. And then transported.
So do they use the same kind of press that they use for wine?
They do, yeah. So it's a bag press is what we use there. So the crusher crushes it into like a, obviously like a pot.
Oh, like a pot.
Like a pot. Air.
Oh, okay, okay.
So from there we transported the juice back on site here, mm-hmm. and the rest of the process was done. So we've done that a few times, but from now on we've decided that we want to really keep things in-house. So we're doing a lot more small batch, a lot more manageable size for us to do here.
And how long have you been doing this?
So our business started, our first release was in 2012. We started off with our first product, which is we're going to start with in our tasting today. So this is the O Cider Original, so a 330 ml bottle. So this particular one is 5.5%, which is on average a kind of a stronger side of a beer.
Oh, it's lovely. It's lovely, lovely tart. Oh, it's,
yeah, on the drier spectrum.
Oh, yeah.
Golden. It's beautiful.
Yes, it has color.
I like the... So what kind of apples go into this sort of thing?
So this is a mix of Braeburn and Granny Smith for this.
Oh, really? And those are not particularly one. Cider apples,
they
necessarily.
They are not all cider apples.
Wow.
Apples.
It's beautiful.
I'd imagine probably much the same in Iowa, is that the cider industry... is really new here. Very, very, very yeah. new. Which means the access to the fruit is, you know...
Oh, yeah. Exist, for the cider apples, you really almost have to start and grow your own stock.
It does. So we started off in WA with this idea, Western Australia, sorry, in Perth.
Western Australia, okay.
With the concept of potentially setting up a cidery.
So did you kind of go there and study the cider making thing?
No. So winemakers originally, so 15 years in the wine industry, both of us.
Okay.
So we're talking to really, they are basically what in Iowa we would call beginning farmers. They're young family.
Thank you. I'll take this.
The Tauranga Farmers Market with O Cider.
Yeah.
And I love their product.
So what is this one?
So now we've moved on to the Perry. So the Perry is a pear cider. Perry is what the traditional name of the pear cider was.
Pear cider is called Perry.
Well, they're synonymous these days. Okay. It was always called Perry, and that's what it just was. But with the new world cider industry increasing and obviously popularity,
so is it
the name is now pear cider.
It's completely pear juice.
This is completely
no
pear
apple.
Juice.
I
like the pear better than
it's
the apple.
It's a bit fuller than the apple. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
and what kind of pears?
This is Bosque and Peckham pears. Yeah, they're really firm.
Yeah. They're great to cook.
Oh,
this is our latest release. So
I've never seen
O Cider. You wouldn't have. Literally, I think we've only just labeled it, so this is kind of new to the public.
Now, let me ask you, how long has that one been aged?
This is probably only about 3 months.
Oh, okay. So what are the apples then?
Well, I don't know if I can rattle them off. We have about 20-something different varieties planted out in the orchard. I think roughly we have about 300 trees planted at the moment, but they're ranging from about 2 years. I think we might even be up to about 6 years old now. Might be
how many varieties?
Like 20.
20 varieties.
I was going to say 22.
Okay, but these are the traditional like British cider apples?
Heritage apple varieties.
Heritage apple. For cider.
Specifically grown for cider.
Oh, this is... This has the complexity of a really good wine.
You notice it.
And look how it's very light color.
It probably will age into a deeper color.
How long will you age these kind of things?
Well, 330 mils, they're probably not going to age that long, to be honest. It's more, you can get the flavor now. You don't have to age these particular ciders.
That's great. Ooh, I think we like cider better than grapes.
When first started this business, it was to be traditional cider makers.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we first started, there were only a few other businesses that were producing cider. And what we noticed, a lot of them were mainstream. So they were really fizzy, overly sweet, drier and drier and drier.
See, because in the U.S., cider is the non-fermented one.
And that was very confusing when we first started selling to American
tourists.
We're
getting used to this.
Does it have alcohol? Mm-hmm. Well, yes, it's cider until we realized it's called hard cider.
Yes, very good.
It's like
hard
liquor.
Okay, now this.
So our small batch was our play range.
What do you mean by play range?
Well, because we'd classed ourselves as traditional cider makers to kind of play in that field of some really interesting, fun ciders, which.
And this is Heilala Vanilla, and they're local.
Oh, this is the vanilla flavor.
This is Heilala Vanilla, and they're a local. Where does the vanilla come from? Tonga,
They have a plantation in Tonga.
They grow vanilla beans here?
No, they're plantations in Tonga.
Yeah.
But they're processed
Tonga?
Here, aren't they?
Yeah, they're in
South Pacific Islands.
Okay, all right. So it's South Pacific Vanilla.
Mm,
oh, yeah, you really can taste the beanie.
Well, apple, cinnamon, vanilla, all those kind of flavors.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, think of apple pie. So we thought, well, we'll give it a try one day. And we kind of...
Do you just drop the pods into the fermentation?
Heilala produce an entire, a massive range of... Here we go. Actually, I just picked this up at the market the other day.
Yeah.
Vanilla extract, syrups, pods, sugar, paste, powder. They make a whole range.
That's all there's.
Okay. Yeah, because you definitely taste that in here.
It comes more at the end palate than I find it right on your face. You can smell it on the nose if you know that you're looking for vanilla. You know, vanilla has a really high pitched scent.
Yeah, and people
can't put your finger on it.
People
sometimes
don't
you
know what vanilla really is without the sugar in it.
Yes,
thing
really
on its own.
Pitch,
right.
Right, my ladies, we are moving into what we have classed as our champagne range.
Okay, so the method traditional means basically you're turning the bottles every day. They're yes. stored at this Absolutely. Angle that champagne bottles are stored at, which is basically almost upside down. And what's that kind of rack called?
It's called a riddling rack.
Riddling rack.
So you're riddling it.
Yes.
The idea of riddling it is that you want the yeast inside the bottle to Hello. Fall to the cap. Gosh, name. To fall to the cap. So as the yeast cells die, they form a plug at the top of the head.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And when you go to the scourge, you're popping that cap off. It's done at secondary fermentation in the bottle with the CO2 in it. So we should take that cap off. The CO2 that has now formed inside the bottle mm-hmm. forces that cap out, which is why you tip it up. So seal at the bottom.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it forces that plug out. And you top it up with a dosage, seal it, and treat it exactly.
Now, are you yeasting these with a particular culture?
So these, we actually use the champagne yeast, a strain of champagne yeast.
Okay.
We do portions of wild yeast. To be honest, I really love them. I love the flavour profiles that wild yeast.
I do too.
But
it's a gamble.
It is a gamble, and hence why we do a lot of small parcels of things. So you probably noticed the different texture on your tongue.
Okay.
Very different mouthfeel to our standard range.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing as pears. So pears are slightly sweeter than apples. So
mm-hmm.
The makeup of a pear.
But sometimes
there's a bit of sugar in it that doesn't ferment all the way out. So you're
well,
they
seem to have a tiny bit more body to me. Oh, wonderful. And very bubbly.
Any CO2, do you?
That was Dana Prisgintis having fun in New Zealand. She sent us that interview. That's what she's been doing for Christmas, visiting orchards and farms and family in New Zealand. And she spent time at the O Cider Orchard talking about hard cider. Ooh, sounded like she had a good time. Water. Another thing to raise your glass with. It's been in the news a lot lately. There's way too much in Missouri, Illinois, and northern Arkansas right now. And we have strange news from the North Pole. There's way too much water up there, too. It's supposed to be ice. And temperatures above freezing in the North Pole. It's warmer in the North Pole than in central Iowa. What a Christmas. What a Christmas. And in California, it's exactly the opposite. Water shortage there. And the water shortage for a long time. And thinking about how a lot of food for us comes from California. 20% of California's water goes to residents and 80% goes to agriculture. Something to think about there. Goes for things like alfalfa, beef, almonds, cotton, and some other things as well. Having a little hard time. Awful dry out there. So it gets one thinking of dry land farming. And in particular, I don't know why in particular, but also we're going to be considering camel milk. Camel milk. Camels come from dry lands. Here's a news item. A bit of good news about a beginning farmer. Sent to the Donalana Kitchen by Mary Swander. Mary Swander is a writer, Iowa Poet Laureate, and currently lives on a small farm in her refitted rural schoolhouse near Kelowna, Iowa. She says, big news in Amish land. A son of one of Mary Swander's Amish neighbors farms in Indiana, halfway between Chicago and Detroit. For a couple of years now, he's been milking camels. That's right, milking camels. Camel's milk is supposedly a rich source of proteins, high in vitamins and mineral, and it's very digestible by people who can't drink regular milk. A lot of health benefits, they say. And also, another reason maybe he's growing camels, milk sells for $80 a gallon. So far, his customers have been people that are basically allergic to regular milk, but now he has a new market. Saudi Arabians in Chicago and Detroit have discovered this farm and the camels, and he's had an interesting summer and fall. The Saudis fly in their private planes, buy the milk, unroll their rugs on the lawn, pray, and have a picnic. That's probably good for business, but this brave new young farmer was at first a little taken aback by the picnics on the lawn, but now he's breeding his camels to try to keep up with the raw milk from camels' demand. Camel milk is obviously one of those booming things. He's also diversifying by producing camel's milk lotion and soap. So thanks to Mary Swander for that bit of news. You are listening to KHOI, Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. I have a little music here called Lost Everything and the Last Chance. Well, thinking of end of new year, beginning of the new ones. How are those New Year's resolutions going, folks? That was some good contra dance music from a CD called A Portland Selection with contra dance musicians George Penke, Clyde Curley, and Susan Songer. Now it's time to raise our glass again and celebrate root beer. This is one of my favorite interviews from our last season, from a show we did last September. Donna and I had a good time finding out about root beer and other summery sort of beverages, and we talked with a good person to talk about this with. Root beer is Will Bonfilio's favorite beverage. Will Bonfilio is with us today. He's an MFA candidate, creative writing and the environment. He really fine person. He writes plays and he drinks root beer. Yes, he does. Welcome, Will.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us, what is root beer? Why is root beer not beer? And why is root beer just plain old not soda pop?
Well, it's really a historically rooted beverage. Back when humans were still traveling by boat and didn't have the commodities that they have now, they had to transport people for extremely long amounts of time. They needed sustenance. They needed a beverage. They needed to stay hydrated. And unfortunately, water was very difficult to travel, especially overseas, because you store it in something like a wooden barrel, and it starts to rot out the barrel. It becomes contaminated. The water will actually rot. So,
and it doesn't taste very well.
No, well, that's the idea. So, a number of travelers needed to find a beverage that could withstand
besides
long
whiskey.
Days. Right, exactly. Well, that's part of it.
Or gin.
They actually did turn to alcoholic mm-hmm, beverages, and mm-hmm. you know, one of the beverages that was developed was grog. And when Americans began to colonize, or when people started to colonize America, what they found is they tried to recreate that grog, but had to work with a number of different herbs and wheats that weren't available, that they had never encountered before being from Europe. So what happened was all these different recipes for grog and for alcoholic beverages developed. One particularly utilized the sassafras root, the root of the sassafras tree.
And is sassafras only American originally?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's indigenous to mm-hmm. North America.
Root beer started here. Oh, goodness.
Yes, it did. Now, in particular, root beer, it developed over a long period of time. But one of the founders, so to speak, one of the integral creators of root beer was this guy Charles Hyers, who was a philanthropist, and he was also a self-styled inventor in the early 1900s. And on his honeymoon, he traveled to a little farm in Delaware where he was served a sassafras tea. And he thought that it was a marvelous beverage, one that he thought should be shared with the wider community. And at the Philadelphia Centennial of 1908, he brought along this beverage, this powder that could be mixed with water to create
a
beverage.
Was it just ground sassafras?
It was a combination of sassafras and a number of different herbs in there, including rosemary and a few others that
So was it reputed to have any medical benefits?
Of course. Mm. You know that all those early beverages were reputed to be medicinal in some form. But, you know, he marketed this powdered beverage, and that was Hyers root beer, and it slowly developed over time and started to shift. And after,
but it was not carbonated. At
not
that point.
Not yet. No, that came along with the A&W chain, who were taking a leaf from Coca-Cola and started serving these carbonated pleasure beverages, as they called them.
Carbonated pleasure event. Say that again, Will.
Carbonated pleasure beverages.
There you go.
And Charles Hyers jumped on that bandwagon and said, well, my beverage can be a carbonated pleasure beverage too. And and that sort of brought about root beer. And it wasn't – while Hyers was really credited with creating root beer as it were, A&W, the founders of A&W really took it to a new commercial and popular level, especially with the advent of Prohibition in the late 19-teens, early 1920s, because alcohol had been banned, and because a number of people in the United States were looking for a similar beverage to relax with, root beer got its title. In fact, when Hyers first was producing it, he was calling
it from roots,
root
right?
tea. Yeah,
sassafras root. What other roots are in it?
Well, there are a number of different roots. Birch root and birch bark certainly have been integral.
There's also birch beer, right? Mm-hmm. Which is non-alcoholic usually.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Before it was called root beer, what did Charles Hyers call it?
He called it root tea.
Oh, tea. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, I see. The beer too, huh? Marketing.
Right. Okay. So there once Prohibition came, he just styled it beer because, you know. And that's actually – it's funny because that's how I got into root beer. I saw my grandfather drinking beer, and I was like, I want to have beer too, little five-year-old me. And, of course, that
– And that's – is that when they put the carbonation in it then?
Yeah, around the – around
that's
19 –
That's what made it beer.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. Well, technically the name change came before the carbonation of it. It was styled root beer simply in response to the culture that was going on around it. They needed a – kind of alcoholic beverage to compensate for the loss of real alcoholic beverages.
Mm-hmm. And this was going on in America. Was root beer popular in Europe or other places too? Was it imported or is it a brand new idea from America or what?
Root beer is definitely an American commodity and it hasn't really taken off. In fact, a lot of Europeans don't drink root beer at all. They find it to be a little bit bitter, a little bit astringent. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also very sweet too.
Yes, that's true. But in fact, in some places, well, really, it's the culture that has really dictated where root beer has taken off.
But Europeans also have their own traditions of medicinal concoctions that are beverages. They're just different flavors, but you know, there's a lot of mint ones, a lot of anise ones, a lot of...
And cocoa, too. That was huge.
Yes.
But I think the second largest market for root beer outside of the United States is actually Australia. And there they have a couple of, which, you know, what does that say? But they have a couple of beverages. I was just thinking I could have brought one with me, but I haven't stumbled across it recently.
You know, it's true. I think in New Zealand I've also had some sort of medicinally flavored sodas, as it were, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Say that again. What was it you said that I couldn't say?
Carbonated pleasure beverages.
Carbonated pleasure beverages.
Oh, I do like that. Well, Will, you are a good person to ask all these questions about, because of all things that people collect, you collect root beers.
That's true. I've had about, I've tried about 170 different kinds, and it's I'm a huge nerd about it. I keep pretty extensive Microsoft Excel documents with just, you know, where
tasting
they're from.
Tasting notes?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Talk about what flavors dominate, uh-huh. You know, the colors, how prolific the head is.
What kind of flavor descriptors do you use in your documents?
Well, I always examine for what predominantly shines, because just as with any beverage, there's always a complex sort of layering of flavors that's going on. So what really stands out to me is the flavor that dominates that layer, and also the...
Tell me some of the words that you use.
Well, one of the big things that I'm always looking as far as evaluating a drink is how balanced it is, the sort of levels of flavors, whether it's too bitter, and if it is, that's an unbalanced drink. If it's too sweet, same thing. So I'm looking for just that right amount of
And what's the bitterness that's in root beers?
Well, the bitterness can come from a number of different flavorings. Licorice, certainly. But
licorice.
Anise also.
Licorice, anise, sassafras, what other?
Well, I think any good root beer has to have a degree of vanilla, just as far as the creaminess to it. And that really, my favorite root beers have always been ones that.
Well, I find vanilla it's always kind of ties the flavors together.
It does.
In anything that you're using it in.
Yeah, it's just such a sweet sort of, it's like a mixer, you know, mm-hmm. It just brings everything, so it just smooths it all out.
It's an undertone that makes everything harmonious.
Vanilla is not a root. Vanilla is a
bean.
It's a bean. But it looks sort
it's
of
an
rooted.
Orchid bean,
yeah.
Actually.
Oh, it's an orchid.
Is
yeah.
that right?
Yeah.
I know it's really fancy and hard to gather and very.
And there are different vanillas,
yeah,
too.
Right,
there's Madagascar vanilla. There's certainly Mexican vanilla.
And do they all come in that sort of string? That little of like, because it's a very long and narrow
yeah, mm-hmm.
sort of
pod. It's a seed pod.
I'm gonna make a guess here and say yes, because they're all vanillas, but different. You know, the origin of it makes it slightly. Well, also, like for example, if you buy Mexican vanilla, some of it has to do with the way it's processed, because vanilla, as you're usually buying, not just the beans, you're buying the extract. So. Whatever they're extracting it with also changes the flavor.
Right,
and then there's
right.
the double strength vanilla and vanilla powder. So lots of vanillas.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the adventures you've had searching root beers? It seems like sort of a bulky thing to collect. And how do you keep from drinking them? I think the bottles are wonderful. Do you buy them specifically to drink, or do you like save them as collector's items?
No, I definitely drink them. And I did used to save the bottles as just sort of collector's items. But this past summer, actually, I really got I had to move several times in the period.
That'll do it.
Yeah, and I got yeah. So my collection is down just to my four favorites.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Which are?
There's a St. Arnold's In Texas, which is bottled out of Austin, Texas, which is a lovely, lovely root beer, very well balanced, but also has a strong vanilla flavor to it. That's a wonderful beverage, and I've tried very hard to come across it more than the one time I did.
Can you mail order it?
You certainly can, but the problem with buying root beers or any beverage really through the mail is that it's so heavy. The glassware is just very heavy. Mm-hmm. So it's an expensive endeavor. Mm-hmm. And one of my other favorites is Hank's Philadelphia style. But there are so many other good root beers out there that are just really either well-balanced or very unique. My favorite root beer is not actually the best root beer I've had, but it's my favorite because it's so different. It's called Boylan's, and it's bottled out of New Jersey.
B-O-Y-L-A-N-S.
Uh-huh.
And what's different about it?
Well, it doesn't achieve the same sort of pleasure with balance that the other root beers does. Instead, it puts a lot of focus on what it calls a traditional flavoring. So the licorice and anise flavors are very, very strong. It's not as creamy, but it's also not as carbonated, which allows for a much smoother taste. It's a wonderfully unique brew, and it actually was a source of much comfort for me. I remember going through college and just being really unhappy my first year at college. And I remember one day, my day was almost ruined because I had bought some Boylan's root beer and it was totally undercarbonated. There was just nothing to it. And I wrote to the company and I said, hey, I just spent, $5 on this 4-pack and, it's not even carbonated. And it was a really snooty message on my part, but they said, we're so sorry you had that experience. They mailed me a 12-pack, just a big box, came in the mail. I went down to the campus post office, and they were like, there's a huge package back here for you. They brought it out, heavy package, took it up. 12 root beers just in a little styrofoam, beautifully packed.
Oh, great customer service.
It was marvelous. And it totally I remember.
And it had more bubbles in it?
Oh, yeah. And it was – and I can never think about just the joy of root beer, the joy of drinking, without thinking about how wonderful it was to bring that into the cafeteria after getting it from the post office and saying, guys, look what I got. You have to try this. This is a fantastic root beer. Oh. And sharing it with friends. And yeah, it was so they're fantastic. But there are a number of really wonderful, wonderful root beers out there. And just as with any beverage.
And what's available in our neighborhood, so mm-hmm. to speak, mm-hmm. what is your preferred?
But Wheatsfield carries an organic brand of root beer called Virgil's, which is really a fantastic
Virgil's
beverage.
Is your favorite of what we can get here?
I would imagine it's right up there with the top few.
I will take a shout out for that root beer. I like it. Also, they make – I don't know if this is related to root beer, but a cream soda.
Yes.
Which is that's kind of a vanilla-ish sort of thing. And I like cream soda, but Virgil's root beer is good.
I do, too.
Cream soda is a derivative of root beer, actually. Okay. A lot of people – like in A&W. When A&W came out – A&W is actually credited with inventing cream soda because, they have – their root beer was actually much more and remains a very, it has those very strong tones of vanilla. And a lot of people really took to that and said, we love this. Can we just get the vanilla?
This leads to, do you know egg creams?
Yes.
You're from New York. Oh.
Yes.
Tell us about egg creams. This is something I learned when I went to college in New York.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Honestly, Donna, I think you'd be more the authority. All I know about egg creams is that they're used with the egg whites, and they're mixed in there. But I know very little.
I mean, okay, this was a long time ago. But knowing New York, they probably still make egg creams. It's you go into little – usually places that sell – tobacco, and they have just a small amount of beverages, and this is a long time ago, but they take the traditional ice cream soda glass, and they must put vanilla syrup in it, carbonated water, and the egg white. I'm guessing that that's about all it is, and then they mix it with a long spoon, and you just drink it, something like that.
I know there are some other flavors. There's a beverage company out of New York called
Jeff's. That would have been a vanilla egg cream.
Right. And they make I love root beers, but I'll try all the other kinds of sodas. But they make one of the most fantastic orange cream sodas, Jeff's Egg Orange Creams.
Egg. Oh, right. Maybe it had milk in it too, a little dash of milk. What's an egg or an orange cream?
Oh, it's just like an orange cream soda, except it's a. It's just. It, I remember tasting it, thinking this is one of the most wonderful beverages I've ever had. It's smoother. It's very, very creamy. I mean, it really puts the cream in the egg cream.
Well, and these were always made. At the moment, you know, it's not something you bought in a bottle or, you know.
I can only imagine then how good it must be in person at the soda fountain.
Oh, yes, must be. What's the name of that company that made your favorite orange soda?
Jeff's, it's called. Jeff. Pretty simple.
Oh, that's good. That's good. You grew up in, you just said you grew up in Rochester area.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a favorite childhood root beer? I mean, what was the go-to root beer when you were growing up?
Well, one of the nice things about growing up where I did is it's home to a chain of restaurants called Tom Walls, which makes their own root beer. It's a little similar to Culver's in the Midwest. Number of burgers, and they'll serve them on these very small plates. But the root beer that they make was its real calling card. Back in the 1940s and 50s, it was
right,
the
people
A&W
drank
of upstate New York.
More root beer and less Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola.
Is that right?
It's an old thing.
I know that root beer was often preferred through the early 20th century because it was sweeter than Coca-Cola,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
a little bit, mm-hmm. well, yeah, easier to ingest.
So was this Tom Walls restaurant, it was only available at the restaurant or did they bottle it?
No, only available at the restaurant.
Oh!
And that was a pretty smart move on their part because
wow.
it really brings in a lot of customers and it remains a staple of upstate New York.
Oh, it still is.
Yeah.
So if we are ever there. Oh, I'll look
and
for
then,
that.
And then
oh.
when does the A&W – okay, picture me, 1956,
okay.
pre-driving, but – and this is a little town, southern Illinois, but I'm sure every town had them. The A&W root beer stand, okay? Mm-hmm. You know, mom and pop say, okay, kids, we're going out for dinner tonight. We go to the A&W stand. You roll down the windows. The car hop comes out. She puts a tray, usually on the driver's side. You get hot dogs and then root beer, which comes in, of course, frosty mugs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when did that all happen, and how did every place in America get one?
Well, that was A&W's influence again. I really wish I had looked up...
This is way pre-McDonald's, too, I have to say.
Yeah. I really wish I had looked up the creators of or the founders of A&W because they deserve a lot of credit on this show, especially. They're like my heroes. but they actually had this idea, you know, we have this drink. We're going to pair it with true American food.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going all through, like, the late 1940s up through, you know, that it really took off in the 50s. These drive-in restaurants, these drive-in stands, root beer stands really took off. And A&W certainly wasn't alone, but they really developed this wide chain that spanned across the country. And it was a huge success. It became a...
Did you have one in your town?
Oh, of course.
And in high school, when we could drive, it became the loop. You drive down Main Street, you loop through the A&W to see if anybody you know is hanging out there, if there's a party happening in all the cars. If not, you pass on back and you go down back around the square, and it's a drag.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just keep going round and up and down, slowly cruising.
A&W, one of the better inventions of the century, I do believe. I want to take this time to mention that you are listening to KHOI FM 89.1. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We'll be right back. are talking root beer with Will Bonfilio. And Donna, you have something to say about egg creams.
I've whipped out my iPad here and I did a little check on egg creams. Apparently, it is... It has neither egg nor cream in it.
No.
It is milk and syrup. So chocolate or vanilla, you stir vigorously the syrup and the milk, or perhaps half and half. Ina Garten says half and half. And then you pour in the soda. Now, this is could originally only be done at soda fountains and had to be done by a soda jerk.
Why jerk?
It's what we always call them. Do you know the origin of that?
I don't.
It has something to do with the tap, where the carbonation. Does that mean that you are a bit of a root beer jerk?
I suppose I am.
Nobody
self-effacement here.
Nobody who brings root beer is a jerk.
You brought
some things. Tell us about what we've got here.
I did. Well, I decided that it would be a little bit. I mean, it's well and good to talk about root beer, but the real joy of root beer is being able to share it. And what I have here is one of the original root beers. This is Heyer's, and this is not the same recipe as it was first made with back in. The early 1906, the Philadelphia Centennial, but it is it remains a staple of the beverage world.
It is kind of a standard root beer flavor, isn't it?
Yes,
the classic.
And it does have that same sort
very
of
very herbaceous or rooty, as it were, I guess.
Beautiful. No, that's beautiful. That's one of my words that I use when I'm writing the critiques. But yes. Heyer's definitely has that root beer flavoring to it, and I say that using
the roots.
Air quotes.
Yeah, you get the botanical.
Right, exactly. And it does have that complexity. There's less of a vanilla flavor, and that's sort of the claim that the company stands by, that it's an old beverage, an old-timey beverage that they hope will, represents.
Now, are there some that are not as highly sweetened as this?
Absolutely, and I have a couple right here with me. One that I have, for example, is a brand called Sprecher's, which is made out of Washington.
Ta, the little pop. There you go.
Sprecher's.
Sprecher's. You got it. And this is one that back in 2006 was recognized by the New York Times as being the best root beer you could buy in America. So it's got quite a claim to it. But this is
Lana
one that's
for you?
A little bit less sweet, in part because it's not made with high fructose corn syrup, as so many root beers today are.
Yes,
very nice.
Another American invention.
Yes, there we go. Perhaps not as wonderful as root beer in itself, but.
Oh, now this one is much more vanilla-ish, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And it does have, it is a very sweet brew, but at the same time it is a little less. It does have a little less of that cutting, sharp edge to it that you'll sometimes find with juice.
Now, as Heyer's, do you think it's the sarsaparilla that pushes that root flavor higher?
It definitely is the sarsaparilla flavoring.
Mm-hmm.
Heyer's is a beverage, like many others in today's day and age, that uses a lot of artificial flavors. It is a sarsaparilla flavor they're going for, but whether or not it is actually sassafras root is we could probably guess.
That's
make an educated
flavoring.
Guess
there's not. So many flavorings. That's Sprecher's, Sprecher. And I always thought that the logo of this root beer company was a crow, but it is not a crow. I look a little closer, and it's a griffin. It's a crow's head on sort of a monkey's body with claws, with a tail and wings. So it's maybe a flying monkey. No, but it is a bird or a griffin of some sort. And whatever it is fine root beer.
Mm. This is actually – the brew itself is actually – we're going to talk in a little bit about alcoholic root beers and alcohol in general. But Sprecher's actually also makes a hard root beer, and I'll be sure to mention that. But the last – before we get to that, the last root beer I have is one that's Iowa-made. It's Great River Brewery's River Rat Root Beer, and this is available over in Davenport. Comes in a tall boy can.
So is it made in Davenport?
It is indeed, yes.
Our own Iowa root beer. There
that's
we
right.
have. But you can only get it on the east in the eastern part of the state?
Well, that's where I found it. Typically what I'll do is wherever I'm traveling, I'll make a stop around. There are a number of really great websites out there about, where you can find certain root beers and breweries that make their own root beer. This is one that I found via that via one of those websites, and it.
This one has almost goes up to a lemony octave or something like that.
It is a little, and I think there is a little bit of citrus in there, but it is also more bitter than the other two that we've tried, which I imagine will be.
Oh, you know, I love bitters.
Yeah,
I'm on a whole.
It
bitters
is. It
kick,
is. It
so,
is. Yeah. It does have more.
To me, a little more refreshing somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and less sweet.
And also it has less of a body to it. You know, you talk about
it's true.
Those other two root beers that we've had, they're
yes.
very complex, they're very heavy.
Lighter.
They're mm-hmm. they're sipping root beers.
Mm-hmm.
I'll usually try and take some time to define whether a root beer is more sipping or more for guzzling or, you know, better suited for root beer floats. But this is definitely one that you can drink a little bit easier.
Right, might quench your thirst a little more. Now, I have to say, growing up, my mother's side of the family was from southeast Missouri. They call it sarsaparilla,
mm-hmm.
And also our sarsaparilla sody.
Mm-hmm.
Sody?
Sody.
Oh, really?
Right. Down south, they didn't say pop. They called it sody.
Mm, there you go. Well, I grew up with pop, but it was pop.
Pop is northern.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're wonderful.
I think I might like a not quite so sweet one. Mm-hmm. So tell us about the alcoholic versions.
Well, the alcoholic root beers, they're often, I think they're capitalizing on a little bit of a return to form. You know, so many people enjoyed root beer because it's not alcoholic, but now, you know, there are some people who would mix it and would create cocktails, and this is some beverage companies just getting ahead of the fact. And even here in Ames, we have a couple alcoholic root beers available to us. Like I said, Sprecher's makes an alcoholic root beer, and the Griffin is much more noticeable on that.
So do you find them in the beer section of wherever you're shopping?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. But there are a number of other alcoholic root beers that are available in Ames, and I imagine around Iowa, including one brand called Not Your Father's Root Beer, which I actually tried for the first time this past summer coming back from New York.
And what do we think?
That one's I have sort of a love-hate relationship with alcoholic root beers because having grown up with root beer as a non-alcoholic beverage and having it represent something of my childhood and something so comforting and beloved to me, once you throw in an additional ingredient, it's almost like
a classicist here.
That's exactly it. I'm a snob. And that being said, however, it does add an extra element of sort of maltiness to it, which is enjoyable. And is
the alcoholic content along the lines of a beer?
It is, yes, around 4 to 6 about alcohol.
Oh, it's
by
very
volume.
Low.
Yes.
Then. Okay.
Yeah. The best, however, that I've had has been the one that has been able to achieve the most balance, which is Coney Island Root Beer, which only just this past summer went on sale at Hy-Vee. And also was available at Wheatsfield.
Oh, we can get it here in town?
Yes, we can.
In the liquor section?
Yes, that's correct.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And like I said, it's just very balanced. It's very vanilla. That's the dominant flavor there. And I was actually just out doing karaoke the other night with a friend, and he ordered one of those. And he said, this is a dessert. I could drink this all night. And he did.
And then what about root beer floats?
Oh,
That's
my bread and butter.
Oh, okay.
I love
floats. So do tell us, are there any tips you need to know? What makes the best root beer float, in your opinion?
Well, the best root beer float, no matter how you make it, is going to come down to the ingredients, a strong root beer and a strong ice cream. Vanilla ice cream will add a lot of cream, so you don't necessarily need a creamy root beer.
No, you don't. You might want to use that really sassafras-y one.
That's right, yeah. So I mentioned Boylan's, which has a very strong licorice flavor and mm-hmm. less of a vanilla flavor. That makes my favorite root beers. It's just absolutely marvelous. But what I typically do is I'll just make it with a little, put a little ice cream in a glass, pour the root beer on top, and
the ice cream goes in first
for me.
Okay.
Because what happens is there's actually a chemical reaction in there. The sugars sort of oppose each other, and they come out with this. You know, the carbonation just sort of explodes. You mm-hmm, get this head mm-hmm. that really just flows over the glass, and it's a head that doesn't really dissipate. It just becomes a lot more airy. So root beer floats can be a bit of a mess, especially if you're 9 years old.
Well, but that's the fun.
I think just with a beer also, you want to delay that chemical reaction. You don't want to aid it by pouring it in quickly and, you know, having
right,
that
no, then you had of all air.
Right, right, right. So it's a very slow additional process. You're just sort of
so
pouring
you pour
it on
the beer in slowly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, Are there any other combinations besides vanilla and root beer that you might recommend, or is that just the best?
I remember being maybe 14 years old and just really, really wanting a root beer float. And I prepared my float. And at that time, I was making them by putting the root beer in first. And I, you know, dirtied up the glass by putting the root beer in it. And I went in the freezer and I realized there was no vanilla ice cream. All we had was chocolate. And I said, well, what the heck? You know, let's just go for it. And I remember just defending it so hard to my parents and my friend who was over and saying, yeah, this is great. This is better. No, it wasn't. I was just trying to save face.
Okay, so it's really just vanilla.
I mean, I haven't tried everything, though. I mean, but French vanilla, that's really that's a very, very good combination.
And when we're making the beer floats, of course, there's any number of beers, but like chocolate stout with chocolate ice cream has turned out to be quite good.
Now, this is something new to me. I've never heard of beer floats. Can you tell me a little bit about this?
Well, we've been raving about them almost for a whole year. Do pick up a chocolate stout,
mm-hmm.
or some of them have coffee stouts.
I have one in my fridge right now.
Okay. Take a scoop of chocolate or vanilla ice cream and make it just like you would a root beer float. And it's yummy. It's not quite as sweet, and of course has more bitters in it, which I love.
Right, you're all about that.
It's kind of the adult, I would say it's the adult ice cream float.
All right.
Dan had to talk me into that. It's a dandy. Yes.
I know, it sounds funny, but when you taste it, you go, I mean, why not?
Why not? Carbonated pleasure beverages. That was a fine bit there about root beer. Root beer, you've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We'll go out with a little bit of music called, it's a set of reels here, called Le Tournement, la Maison de Glace, the Ice House, and Early in the Year, which we are. Happy 2016, folks. We heard a report from Donna Prusgentis from Down Under. She talked to us from New Zealand. She talked to hard cider maker Rowena Pierce from O Cider Orchard. Thanks to Mary Swander for news about camel's milk. And we raise a glass to the new year with a great interview with Ramon Filio, all about root beer. You've heard fine contra dance music today by the band Portland Connection and a tune from Contratopia. Listen to the Donna Lana Kitchen on this fine radio station and support this fine radio station, KHOIFM.org. We're community radio. Go to the KHOIFM.org website and you can press the donate button there and help this fine organization along. And look for the Donna Lana Kitchen page there too. We have past shows, recipes. This show airs live Tuesdays at noon. It's repeated Tuesdays at 7 p.m. or anytime on the KHOIFM.org website. Contact the Donna Lana Kitchen at KHOIRadio@gmail.com or 292-2878. We'd love to hear from you. My name's Lana Noctigal. We had fine engineering by Rick Morrison. Eat good food. Enjoy life.